Hello and welcome to Fair Game, the podcast with a firm focus on Irish sportswomen, coming to you from our new home of the Headstuff Podcast Network. I'm Elaine Buckley.
And I'm Emily Glenn. On this episode of the show, our 20th episode so far, we're getting stuck into an event which takes over the capital city this weekend as 20,000 runners put their months of training and preparation into action for the Dublin Marathon.
But before we do that, just a quick reminder of where you can find us. Check out headstuff.org for our full archive of episodes. Fair Game is also available to stream and download on iTunes, Android, Stitcher and Spotify. Just search our name and we'll be there. If you could find it in your heart to rate and review us on your app of choice too, that would be hugely appreciated. That's actually not just something people like us say at the start of podcasts for the crack. It does hugely help other like-minded people find out about us.
We also love if you could share the podcast on social media or in your sports club WhatsApp groups. It goes a long way. So if you like what you hear and you think others would too, then please pass it along. And we love us some feedback and suggestions. So if there's something you're interested in that we haven't covered on the podcast so far, give us a shout and let us know. And finally, make sure you're following us on Twitter at FairGameCast, where we provide a constant stream of news, views and opinions on everything going on in women's sports, both at home and abroad.
So back to our focus for the next hour or so, running. In Ireland, recent research has shown that female participation in sports centres largely around solo activities, with running being one of the most popular, be it for physical benefits, mental release, or working towards the end goal of a major event. More Irish women than ever are out and about running at all levels. For many, the challenge of a marathon is the ultimate goal.
And let's not forget, the women's marathon has only been an Olympic sport since 1984, and it was a mere 8 years before that in 1976 when Catherine Switzer was the first woman to run the Boston Marathon. I think we all remember that photo when a race official tried to tackle Catherine to the ground and stop her completing the distance.
Women have been running the Dublin Marathon since it began in 1980, and the capacity of the event has grown significantly in recent years, with a 30% increase in entrants since 2015, taking the overall capacity to 20,000 and making it the fifth largest marathon in Europe. There has also been a rise in the number of female entrants, with 6,615 women set to take to the streets of Dublin at this year's event. That's an increase of over 2,000 women participating since 2015.
So it is our great honour to have with us in studio a woman who has won the Dublin Marathon in 2013, running a blistering 2:38.51. She returned the next year to defend her title and came second, running a PB of 2:34.19. This Olympian has represented Ireland in middle distance running, but she's in the Fair Game hot seat on the eve of the Dublin Marathon to talk to us about mastering the marathon. Maria McCambridge, you are very welcome to Fair Game.
Thank you very much for having me.
Welcome along, Maria. Now, we're going to get into all that a bit later on, but first of all, when we have people in the Fair Game hot seat, we like to take them way, way back to your early sporting life. What were your interests when you were a kid and who were your role models?
I just was into every sport as a kid. Just wanted to play everything, try everything. And it was really just in secondary school. There was a little bit of a cross-country team going and I was like, oh, I want to be part of that and see what it's about. I jumped into the race, loved it, and said, Mum, I want to join a running club. And I just took it from there, joined DSD. It was Dundrum back then, a long time ago. And I've just hooked.
Yeah. Elaine was super excited to ask you that question because she knows you played hockey in school as well.
I did, yeah. Giving up hockey was hard, but as I sort of was leaving school and I was taking up a scholarship in the States, my training was going to step up a bit, and I knew then that I had to sort of finally just take one focus, and I knew that running was going to be the one.
Yeah, you moved to the States in... you're about 19 to go to Providence?
Yes. America was an amazing experience. Providence College was fabulous. I certainly found it challenging at times. I'm a bit of a home bird. And I spent most of my last 2 years on injured. And it's a hard place to be there when all you want to do is go away at the weekends and race and represent the college, and you're sort of stuck back on campus. But I couldn't have asked for a better setup, brilliant education. So I probably put myself in, put my head down and studied a lot harder in my last 2 years. But it was an amazing experience all around.
And what were the facilities like over there for like for training? Was there much support on offer?
The facilities were amazing, but probably only nothing compared to what it is now. It's like they've built a track, they've improved everything. I've been looking at pictures of where Providence is now 20 years on. Yes, my 20 year reunion is on this year or next year, sorry. And I mean, you needed the physio, you were straight into the physio. You needed your new runners, you just got your new runners, and fabulous setup. You were professional, yet you were still living, an amateur life. But it was brilliant.
And were you running 3,000 meters and 5,000 meters in college? Is that right?
The track was sort of 1,500 and 3,000, and then the cross country season distance was 5K at that time. So that was pretty much it at that time.
And how did you decide that those were kind of the distances for you at the time? Was there a coach involved, or was it?
Yes, I mean, I probably went out only having really ever run 1500 and maybe obviously longer with cross country races and stuff. But Ray Tracy, John Tracy's brother, is an excellent coach. Still coaching out there, and everything was very much progression. I knew probably down the road the 3K, 5K would probably be my best distances, and that's where my true love is in the track. And probably the marathon just sort of ended up sort of prolonging your career and extending it out. And you do fall in love with the marathon, obviously, but that's sort of where it all started.
But you came back from America then, and I think you were carrying a bit of an injury. So how did that kind of affect your running ambitions? Talk to us about how you settled in and found your feet in the club again.
It was really, really difficult coming back from the States. I knew I always wanted to come back. As I said, like, I was quite homesick at times, but I had picked up quite a serious stress fracture in my femur, and I hadn't run in 6 months. And sort of coming back when all your contemporaries have moved on, have moved away, the club, the guys and girls that I trained with were either weren't running anymore or had moved on. Some stayed over in the States as well. And I actually didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I was probably at a complete loose end. So I decided to go back and study, and I went to UCD to do a postgrad, and that sort of put a little bit of structure back into my life, but it was and just gave me a sense of like, oh, at least I have something, because it was another couple of months before I actually got back running and found a group to train with.
And at what stage did the Olympics become a possibility, like a real possibility?
I suppose the following year, 99, when I had finally got healthy again, and I started training with Jerry Kiernan, and the Sydney Olympics was coming up, and I really sort of like, I suppose that was probably the first time I really actually realised that, yeah, this is something I really want to go. You always want to be an Olympian. And in 2000 I ran the qualifying time, and it was just unfortunate that four other girls did as well, and I didn't get to go. And I suppose back then it was very hard to sort of look at the next 4 years, but I felt that was the year where I made the biggest jump in performances.
And Maria, you became an Olympian in officially in 2004 at the Athens Games. Talk to us about that experience.
I suppose I haven't had the greatest experiences with the Olympics. There always seems to be controversy and problems following me regarding them. Part of me would love to say I'm a four-time Olympian. I feel that's deep down. I feel I should be able to say that. I've certainly gone through all those cycles, but there's always something has cropped up. I mean, as I said, Sydney, and there was five of us, there was a lot of controversy with the Athletics Ireland and the Olympic Association there, and so there was no official trials, and so not to go into all the ins and outs, but then for the Olympics in Athens, the Olympic Council of Ireland had decided that they were putting a early date to have made the qualifying time, which was completely unfair. And because if you weren't in Australia or in America, you had to wait till June before the European circuit takes off. And if you're actually wanting to be peaking in August, you know, you really want to be starting your racing in June and really trying to perform in July. I didn't have the backup of agents and stuff like that. So, I've always found it very hard to get into races. I'm reading race directors and jumping on planes last minute. There was a couple of 5,000s, and I literally, it was something like I had run 5,000. Five thousand meters in a row, and was on the kept just running 15:29, 15:30, 15:31, and eventually the time came, and there was a lot of controversy, and there was a lot of uproar about it. And but I sort of deep down, I felt that I didn't want to give up until the end, because the official IAAF time wasn't until 2 weeks before Athens. And no matter what, I felt that I was in that shape. And if there was a possibility that I could get into a race, which came up over in Belgium. And it was really more just for myself. I knew I could do it. And I felt like at least I can, if I do it, I'll put myself in the running. So, and I did, I made the qualifying time, which was a very stiff qualifying time back then. And but I knew it was never going to be, it was a real battle over the last 2 weeks. And I saw a really awful side to everything. And it was emotionally very draining. And I would hope no other athlete would ever have to go through something like that. And it ruined the build-up. I mean, I got quite sick and run down, and I just found it very difficult to deal with. I was quite a shy, reserved person back then, and even deep down, I was strong, but on externally, then I found it very hard to deal with the whole situation, and I didn't perform very well. But so, sort of, the experience was a bit ruined, but you know, at the end of the day, it was still amazing to actually go there.
That sounds like a really kind of bruising experience. And you're saying that you know, the qualifying for those games, and we might come back to the actual experience of Athens in a minute, but talk to us a little bit about the 2012 London games then, because you, in spite of, you met the qualifying standard, but I think there were four women who met the qualifying standard.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that needs to be redressed then?
Yeah, it does. And like I believe in trials. I always have. And for some reason, you know, back in 2000, when for the first time there was five athletes of us qualifying for a time, they still didn't deal with the situation where you had more than three athletes qualifying for an event. And they just didn't anticipate that that was going to happen, because usually it always is, if someone qualified, they got to go, because we are a small nation and we don't have that many qualifying. So I was kind of annoyed that the structures weren't put in place to deal with that. And look, I suppose deep down, I kind of knew that I wasn't going to be picked, because, like, even though it was only a couple of seconds, I just felt they'll always go with the easy option of going by time. And it was hard to take, but you know, it wasn't personal with the athletes. Mm. I felt again let down by the association, because they set a criteria which was quite wishy-washy, and on that paper I met all the criteria. I had come out of the marathon in good shape. I had no injuries. I was out on the circuit proving to them that I was in the shape. One or two athletes I had you know, I suppose it's difficult to talk, because I know these girls, and you know, they are my contemporaries and stuff, and I full respect for what, you know, everything they did, but I just wish it could have been. I wanted it to be the trial in Dublin. I was second athlete that day. Linda Byrne won. I was second. Ava would have been the third athlete, and Katrina Jennings would have been the fourth athlete. But again, they weren't using that, and yet all of us were there. And again, I just think it should have been a race, a qualifying race, and then if you didn't have the time, you had the first opportunity to go off to another race and get that qualifying time. I think other countries do that, and that's what I would have always believed would have been the fairest option.
Yeah, because it arose again last year with the men's, with too many people qualifying. So maybe it is just something that they need to look at long term. But taking back to your own experience of marathon, what was your first ever competitive marathon? Is it one that remember every little detail of?
Yeah. I had spent most of 2007 injured. I was nearly 9 months out, and I just ran out of time to get fit for the Beijing Olympics. So I was kind of at a real crossroads. I was there, do I continue on? I sort of took a 2 week break, and my husband, who has done a lot of marathons and has always been in the back of my mind, you've got to do one. And he had wanted me to train for the Beijing Olympics. He thought that the marathon would have been my best opportunity on such a short limited time, but my head wasn't in the marathon at all then. I was like a 5k runner, and I was trying to still sort of stick with that. And on those 2 weeks, I just questioned everything I wanted to regarding future, in my future in running. And it just clicked one day in the brain. There was exactly 10 weeks then to the Dublin Marathon, and I said, right, I'm just going to put my foot down and see what it's all about.
That's how it goes.
I just started doing, I'd never gone over 12 miles in running, and I just went out and just built things up. We were living in Donegal at the time, and there was a great group of their training, and I just jumped in with them, did all these extra miles, first 100 miles practically ever, and enjoyed every minute of it. It really got a love for just having a real goal and purpose. And because I had missed the Beijing Olympics, my goal was, I said, personally, I want to make that qualifying time. I sort of said, I want to see that I can run under 2:37. And that was all I wanted, to know that I still had something to aim for. And the race was just perfect. I actually only had really felt that the last 2 miles were the hardest thing, and you can always get through the last 2 miles. And I ran 2:36, I think it was, and I was just hooked from there.
That's incredible. It's also really kind of nice to know that even at, you know, your level, the kind of pointy end of the spectrum, the elite level, that, you know, you even elites are like, you know, trying to squish an entire training block into 10 weeks, or like, you know, it never really goes perfectly. You're never having your 16 or 12 week training block.
No, I always only ever like to have a specific 10 or 12 week marathon block, because I would be fit and leading up to that and working on 10k and stuff like that and coming into it. But then I always just felt mentally I could only handle 10 or 12 weeks of marathon focus, where you're just, it's all about the marathon, where you just become so zoned into that particular race. And I found that's kind of what mentally I found as the best channel.
And where did you come in that race? That was your first one, so
I don't know where I came, but I won the national title that year, so I was delighted with that. So
on
that
10 weeks training.
But I mean, I suppose I was fit leading up to the break, and it was more just kind of I suppose I didn't lose too much fitness in the 10 weeks or the 2 weeks that I took off, because I was able to jump back in, and I was just doing a lot of miles and some turnover stuff, and it was all new. And I just
And skipping forward a few years then, Maria, to 2013, when you famously won the Dublin Marathon, which was in a time of 2:38:51, which is just incredible. What went right for you on that special day?
Well, it was actually quite a tricky, things hadn't been going well that year. Well, more so that I had qualified for the World Championships in Moscow, and that was a complete disaster. I just 100% could not deal with the heat. We were running at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and it was like 39, 40 degrees.
That's a race you DNF'd from, isn't it?
I did. After 5K, I was burning up. It was like running in a cauldron. I just couldn't deal with it. Probably deep down, I knew that it probably wasn't a good idea because I would have had to have trained in a lot better, longer. My form wasn't great going in, but it was okay. It was just kind of average. But so coming off that again, it was awful. I had an awful experience in Russia, in the hospital and collapsing and all that kind of stuff. But I just then said, right, well, maybe I try not to put all that work to waste. And I sort of said, how amazing would it be to win the Dublin Marathon? So I said, right, let's stick with it for another couple of weeks, because that was kind of the end of August. But it was an amazing, wonderful to win it. I wouldn't say I was running that brilliantly leading into it, but on the day it went well.
Do you remember crossing the line?
It was fantastic. And I got so much amazing support by so many people during the marathon and afterwards. And I mean, it seemed as if that was probably my best race ever. I got so much people on the street and everything. It was really uplifting.
The year after, you went back to defend your title. And you had probably what must be a bittersweet day, because you came second. You lost out to a competitor, a Kenyan athlete, by 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this the other night, and it's like, you know, that would, like, I've never raced like that, but those races, kind of those runs where you just want something slightly different to have changed, they kind of stick with you. So how do you look back on that day, and is it something that you then kind of have used to give you confidence for your career since then?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that was the best marathon race I've ever run. After the 2013, I was very run down and in a real bad way of what I was going to do. I couldn't shift this cold. It was running into 6-8 weeks, and I think it was obviously an accumulation of probably coming from Moscow and then running Dublin. And so I was just there, and I was with Dick Cooper, a fantastic coach, but I wasn't motivated anymore. I wasn't motivated to do the same training cycle, and I didn't really know what I was going to do or where I was going to go. Like, that I wasn't happy with how I was feeling. So I sort of was in limbo land for a little while, and then I was invited on that March with an Athletics Ireland training camp over in Portugal. And Gary said, you should just go and just go train with people and just enjoy it and see where you go, because I was kind of self-training, coaching myself at that point. And Chris Jones, who was the high performance director at the time, and I just started talking to him, and was at a low point because I was just there, I'm training and I'm not going anywhere, and I know I can do so much more. So he sort of took on a bit of a guidance role with me, and it sort of developed from there, and I just got really, really motivated. It was something new, it was something fresh, it was a whole new type of training that I had never done before. I started running easy, I started doing longer sessions, I started doing just a whole different change of everything, and I just loved it. I was so lapping up a new challenge of how to train, how to apply everything, and everything was so specific. Every day had a real goal, and you sort of you know, you just, if he said run easy that day, he meant it. If he said jog, you jogged. If, you know, because the workouts were so long, they were tough, and he wanted everything in very specific times. So it was amazing, and I really wanted to do Dublin that year. And so again, I started running PBs over 10 miles half marathon, and the build up for the Dublin Marathon was the best ever. I had never experienced training like that. I did 12 weeks of hitting every workout exactly how he wanted, and I have never been so confident going into a race before. And I went there to win. I never for a second, I'd love to get that, all that back, because you wish you could soak it up, because I was so so in the moment of the race. it was quite a horrible day. We sort of backed off a little bit for the first bit of the race, and the Kenyans and the Ethiopians, there was about five of them, went off. And I just stuck in with the group, and I said, no, you know, it'll come back when you turn around the corner and you go down the hill, because it was so windy. And about 16 miles, I'd caught up to the group, and I had a goal in mind. I had of 2:32, but I made a decision at that point when they started sitting in on me, and I was trying to hit my paces, that I was like, I either go for my time here, or they're going to sit on you and use you and block and use you to block the win. So I said, well, look, obviously you really want to run a fast time, but it was more important for me that I wanted to win that race. And so I started playing, you know, a more tactical role from 16 miles. And she moved, the girl who won had moved on the Klonsky Road, and the wind was howling up that road. And I said, she's gone too early. I'm not going to go at that pace up there. And then turning around, then coming on to sort of the Merion, the last little stretch, I just ran out of road. So I was really frustrating, because I was like, I just left my final roll of, or final injection of pace too late. And so I was raging on myself, but I was also really proud of myself, because I never gave up. But it was a strange race in that regard. So sorry, probably a bit long-winded there.
No, at all. It's really interesting that the tactics of a race like that. But yeah, like, to go from winning it 1 year to come back the next year and set a new your personal best.
Yeah, no, I was really, really happy with that. But I was really frustrated, because I feel if I had just started, like, I misjudged. I thought we had a little bit longer to go, and suddenly I saw on the pole 800 metres to go, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I literally was like, I've only got 800 metres to go, oh my gosh, because I thought we had to come down further on the road. So I was annoyed at myself that I had misjudged that as well, because and then the wind was howling in the face and my contacts blew out. And I was hardly, everything was just a blur. These last 400 or 500 metres, I couldn't see anything, and the crowd was going ballistic. It was incredible. Oh my gosh.
You mentioned there, Maria, kind of the importance of the switch up in your training kind of in that period. In terms of your own training regime that Chris kind of guided you in, could you talk us through, kind of drill down into the specifics of it, of say a peak training week for you in the build up to that race?
Firstly, I always found it hard that Monday was my easy day, because usually I always like to start my week on a good note. So, but after the weekend, yes, I totally, Monday was my recovery day. So that was usually only about 50 minutes, and that was fine. Tuesday, I tended to do my hard sessions in the morning, and then the recovery easy 5-6 miles in the evening. Some of the sessions would have been, you'd have your 2 mile warm up and a 3 mile cool down. He'd often get me to do these sort of 2 or 3 miles, sort of like, sort of high aerobic running, and sort of like the pre miles before the workout, which always I just found it was hard, because you just wanted to get on with the workout, but they were actually really beneficial. So I would do 2 to 3 miles at like 6:20 pace, and then the sessions then would often be at varying paces. So if it was say 3 by 5K, it would be 1K at certain pace, and then you'd increase it, and then you go back down. So you could be going like 350, 340, 330, 340, 330, 330. And as you progress into the weeks, then they might be going, like in my last session, I was going like 330, 320, 310, that kind of thing. And then you would repeat. So your recovery, some of the sessions you had recovery, sometimes you didn't. But the faster stuff, then you'd get longer. So there would be a lot of sets running. So that was very new to me. And then you do your 2 or 3 miles sort of at 6:20 again, and then you'd have another 3 miles cool down. So sometimes at the end of the sessions I had run, like, close to 32, 35 kilometres. And then in the evenings, another 35, 40 minutes. Sometimes then, probably be Friday before I would do anything session-wise again. Sometimes the long run would be there, and the long run would include a session where it might be 10 miles easy and 10 miles at marathon pace. And then in between runs would either be recovery or high aerobic runs again at 6:20. So it was all very specific, and every time you ran, you knew what your reason for that run was. And so that was new.
It's funny listening to you. You can remember the times for your splits for a marathon that happened, at this stage. It wasn't like last week. And I'm thinking about it from my own training, but also from, how many people are going to be listening to this on the eve of the marathon, remembering their good weeks and how that gives you confidence or kind of makes you a bit shaky maybe going into a run. And, the mental side of training is really important. So how do you keep focus? Like, do you mantras? Do you keep a training journal where you kind of can look back on your good runs and your good races? Or like, how do you, when you're having a bad run, how do you kind of channel that confidence that you've gotten from all of your training block into turning that around?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's I must say that build up to 2014 was just perfect. So I've never been more confident. Following years, things are very, don't often always go like that. And at times, you really do have to draw in on your mental strength of, and I do would work with mantras. I probably could have worked a bit harder on my psychological aspect to it. I suppose I'd be very much a person who's just like, it's the training that gives me the confidence. And I suppose at times now in the last year or two, I've really struggled, and it gets harder and harder. And as Chris said, it says, the longer you go running, you're going to have more bad races. And he said, that's just the nature of the ups and downs of it and stuff. I suppose, sometimes you just have to I would take a moment and sort of draw in. And at the end of the day, I'm just there right now. I'd be like, right, I'm just so happy that I can run. I still love it. I still love competing. And I probably take the bad better now than I ever would have, because I appreciate that I can still do it. I used to, like, more in my 20s, take it a lot harder, and probably was my own worst enemy. If I had a bad run or whatever, I'd probably go out and I used to do it quite regularly, just go out and hammer out runs the next day just to prove to myself that I still was able to run hard and run fast, But I suppose that's kind of the the younger, not so... the more not really, really seeing the bigger picture sometimes back then. Does that sort of answer?
And with a training program like that, Maria, literally when you were talking through all the splits and what you do every day of the week, I just kept thinking food, 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 food. How does the nutrition side of that kind of peak week training work?
Yeah, I've always been really into nutrition and sort of eating well and eating good food and stuff like that. So I've never found it hard. I suppose I definitely always found in the marathon, I'd go through sort of maybe about the sixth or seventh weekend and I would just be starving. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and my stomach would just be hollow. And I always just found it was like these two or three weeks and I'd be having to go downstairs and get a bowl of cereal, and I'd wake up in the morning and I'd still be hungry. But I suppose... I just, I, I, I mean, I believe in a good balanced diet. I mean, I wish I enjoyed cooking. And I struggle with that kind of thing. I'd be kind of a bit basic and stuff like that. But I do love my food in and when it's presented to me, I'll definitely eat it. I enjoy eating well, so that's not it.
It's not a challenge for you.
No.
It's funny listening to you talk about this, you know, and the food aspect. Like, so I think I'm probably not alone in, I mean, I ran the Paris Marathon a couple of years ago and I put on weight during training for that because I was empty stomach like all of the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, the nutrition aspect of it is so important. And also, you know, you hear so much about recovery. So like how important has recovery been as you've kind of as your training has progressed? So you said when you were younger, you know, the day after a bad race, you just go out and hammer out hard sessions. But now you're probably a little bit kind of smarter about recovery.
Yeah, and more appreciative of the need to recover. I was always somebody, I could never understand somebody who used to be able to train hard and do these workouts Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I was never able to do that. I probably realised I was never able to do that. It was because I ran so hard on the in-between days. So I probably ran my general mileage way too hard. And I know that now. And now I sort of know that I need the 2 or 3 days from a hard session to run easy. And so before I can go again. And I would always sort of try and preach that to the people that I coach, that you need that recovery and, you know, sort of be nice to yourself in a, you know, that kind of way. So and you know, get your friends and go for those easy runs and stuff, you know the general easy aerobic runs are vital for that base.
And injuries can be another kind of big factor for runners at every level. You've had your fair share over the years. How do you gauge when a niggle might be something more sinister and you shouldn't just try run it off?
It's hard. Yeah, I must say, biomechanically, I am not good. I'm probably in my early 20s, I just was so obsessed with running in a very negative or detrimental way to my own body that I would run, I wouldn't admit to there being a problem and then the injury became to the point where I actually could not run anymore. I wasn't very good at managing those. I suppose I'm probably, as you say, as you get older, you tend to sort of appreciate things a little bit better, and you realise that I suppose I have got better at being a bit better in tune with my body. And at the height of my training, I would have always sort of tried to get massages, and I would be a big believer in foam rolling and stretching and stuff like that. And that's something that you can do very easily at home, you know, in front of the television at night and stuff like that. I think the foam roller is probably should be every runner's best friend, you know.
That awkward moment when I haven't foam rolled all year. But look, you know, Maria, like, you know, you're talking about kind of running later into life, and it's really not unusual for female athletes, especially those at the top of their game, to take a break, start a family, and then return to the level that you were at before. So, and that's something that you have done. So talk to us a bit about your experience in that regard.
I suppose if you want to have motivation to get back running, I could not wait after having Dylan. I had a very I couldn't have asked for a better pregnancy and getting back. I trained quite hard when I was pregnant. I ran every morning, and when I couldn't really do any more workouts, I just ran and had a great group of women to train with up in Letterkenny, and that was really enjoyable. And then in the evenings, then I would sort of cross train, and Gary and I that my husband would do a lot of sort of spinning sessions with myself. So it was kind of nice that we spent time together. He was really, he was really good, and it was nice to spend, you know, that kind of quality time now that we weren't running together anymore. So I worked really hard. I thought the spinning was brilliant for keeping myself in shape, and luckily I did get back into shape quite quickly. I was kind of I ended up having to have a C-section, so that was sort of a little bit, I was like, oh no, I'm never going to get back and be in time for running Dublin. I didn't have any further complications, so it was fine.
And do you have any desire, Maria, to make a further jump up to in distance to ultras, or is...
I definitely, the track was always my heart. I still would have always have trained once a week, nearly doing track sessions, even through the marathon, because I just, there's just something that's just my home, as well, my favorite place to train, and I enjoy that training the most. I think the marathon is something unique, and it draws everyone in, and I certainly have loved it. I certainly have experienced the highs, the lows, the uglies, the dropouts, everything in it, and it draws you back. But I do find the distance hard, I definitely think that's answered the question. The 42k is enough for me, definitely.
I mean, all of the time that you've been training and competing at such an elite level, you're still a really prolific club runner. So you still train weekly, you say, probably with DSD, is it?
Yeah, I'm with DSD. Yeah, I've had, I've kind of got back into the club there in the summer, and training with the girls for the shorter distances. And that was really, really enjoyable. And I've got a few friends that sort of I train with as well. I'm delighted to help out. The cross country is coming up, and hopefully we'll retain our title. I think we'll have a tough time of it this year, but hopefully we can. And I just think that it's great, the club ethos.
So before we get on to our listener question and our quickfire closing round, which is where I'm going to grill you for tips and everything else. If there's any women listening who've never considered running or kind of never ran, do you have any tips for them?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, you know, it's amazing how many people who've taken up running and have really got the running bug later in life. My first thing would be to find a friend, and you know, if it's run walk at the start. You can build it up. There's so many groups out there, Couch to 5Ks, and just, you know, it's just so much more enjoyable when you have somebody to run with. And there's so many people and there's so many groups out there. And I really just feel if you just put your name out or your, you know, feelers out, you will find that there will definitely be a group for you. And I really think so many people are just, you know, then that's a great, great social thing as well.
All right, we're going to move on to we put a call out on Twitter and we had some to let them know that you were going to be on the show, and we had some people get back to us who are actually doing the marathon this Sunday who had a couple of questions. So Eimear Nick Dermida asked, sometimes the marathon just doesn't go right for you on the day. It happened to me last year. It can be very disappointing after all that build up. Do you have any tips for how to shake off a bad race and recover mentally for the next one?
Yeah, it's hard. It really is. And that's the hard aspect of the marathon, because all your eggs are on into that one race. It's not like a 5K where you can come back out the next week. And I do appreciate that. I think sometimes you just have to take the time, let your body recover and find yourself another goal. And like sometimes you've got to, it's hard to pick yourself up. The training doesn't go to waste, and you might find then that if you've given yourself a couple of months for another marathon or set yourself up for a 10k half marathon and build it up slowly, that your fitness will come back quickly after you've had, you know, a few weeks easy or, you know, time out and stuff to let your body recover. And I know it might not just happen on that day, but, you know, it won't go to waste. And I really believe that if you can just find your deep inside to find that love again, it will come out, and it will come out in another race, hopefully at a later stage. But it is hard, and but you're not alone. It happens to a lot of people.
We had another question in from Eve Coogan, who asked, I'm doing the Dublin Marathon this Sunday. Any advice for these last few days in relation to diet and my last few training runs?
Take it very easy. If you don't run the day before a race, don't suddenly start running a few miles on Saturday. Don't spend too long at the expo. It's nice and there's a good buzz, but it is draining and it's a lot of time on your feet. Don't be looking up for little extra, too many extra bargains and new things to wear or run in on the last few days. Make sure you've tested it out. If you haven't worn that singlet or t-shirt, make sure you wear it in the next day or two and have it washed. No new runners, make sure you've run in them a good few times. Plenty of fluids as well. Don't go crazy on this carbo loading. I think it's important to eat a lot, but don't overtax your body if it's not used to it. I would be a firm believer that, you know, you just have to sort of increase it over smaller amounts throughout the day. You know, you don't want to have sort of GI distress pretty much on the day, and it's nerve-wracking enough. And just have that water bottle with you over the last few days and just be constantly sipping. And, you know, put the feet up, get early to bed. You have an extra hour to get things organized on Sunday as well. So, and try and stay relaxed and, you know, sort of believe that this is what you've aimed for, and enjoy it and soak up the energy and the atmosphere and use that to your advantage.
It's funny listening to you, like the atmosphere is something that you can't convey in the Dublin race, because it's just incredible out there. But while you are here, we're going to close with some quick fire questions. Okay. No pressure, but we are going to use this time to get some advice for us middle of the packers for the Olympian, from the Olympian in our midst. So four questions. Firstly, what meal do you eat the night before?
Usually pasta. Yeah.
Good stuff. Taking notes there. What do you have for breakfast on marathon morning?
Jam and toast, banana, and then I would usually eat a sort of an energy bar, like a power bar or something, maybe 90 minutes beforehand.
Do you use a song to get you in the zone?
No, I don't really listen to music at all.
Okay, and what's your favourite post-run treat? Do Olympians go for burgers and beers like the rest of us?
Gosh, I'm really bad like that. I don't really have that major desire.
Do you not have a post-match treat?
No.
Wow.
This is why she's an Olympian.
That's incredible. If I do a training session in hockey, I come home and have a treat.
I suppose sometimes, I suppose I usually can't eat quite... You know, I usually have to go for drug testing, so that usually takes quite a long time post-marathon because you're so dehydrated. And they usually have, you know, their fluids and things, yeah.
It's a pretty good excuse as to why she's not having a post-race treat, because she's off getting drug tested.
Yeah.
It's fair, it's fair.
Yeah, no, I suppose, yeah. What do you? I mean, I'll eat anything after.
What are you going to have on Sunday, Emily, after
well,
you finish the marathon?
On Sunday, I'm going to have a very delicious pint of Guinness and some kind of delicious burger. Okay. My mum came to the finish line for the Dublin Marathon last year and famously stood there waiting for me with a mocha and a latte. Or sorry, a mocha and a muffin.
Oh, very nice.
And a latte for herself. And I was like, I'm dying. What am I going to do with this? But yeah, there you go.
And you were able to stomach it and everything.
I wasn't. I was absolutely not. No,
oh,
no way.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. No. Sorry. It was the other way around. Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it is hard. Yeah.
Well, that pretty much covers the marathon for everyone taking part. Big thanks to Maria McCambridge for taking the time to join us in the Fair Game hot seat to share her wisdom and experience on all things competitive running.
Thank
if you are doing the Dublin Marathon this weekend, we wish you all the very best with it. And we hope you've picked up some useful nuggets of info to help you on the home stretch and to tame the taper crazy. If you've been inspired to give running a go based on what you've heard on this episode, then please feel free to give us a shout on Twitter at FairGameCast if you have any comments or questions.
A reminder to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Android, Stitcher or Spotify, whichever one you're listening on now. And be sure to check out the other shows on the Head Stuff Podcast Network too. Some absolute crackers available there. And that's all for this episode, and we'll chat to you again next month.
This podcast is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.